Welcome to the Facing Tomorrow podcast. Today, I have two words for you, Courtney DeWalter. That's enough said, right? My very first time that I end up running with Courtney DeWalter, and I think my last time. No, we've run a couple times since. It was back in 2014 at Desert Solstice. And Courtney showed up with long, baggy shorts, which everybody was kind of questioning and wondering what's up with that, and a terrible nosebleed. Courtney ended up running 100 miles in 24 hours that day. But ever since that day, has taken the ultra marathon running world by storm. She's won Western States, UTMB, Javelina 100, Run Rabbit Run, Moab. Back in 2018, she was the ultra runner of the year, named by Ultra Running Magazine. And just a couple weeks ago, she ended up running 68 hours, 68 yards. That's 283.3 miles at Big's Backyard down in Bell Buckle, Tennessee at Laz's Race. So I want you all to welcome Courtney DeWalter.
That was far too kind. But I loved the walk down memory lane of that Desert Solstice run in 2014.
That was so fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, they put on such a great race. But I did have an epic nosebleed, basically that entire race.
Yeah, I remember we thought you had it under control, and then it was like 3 hours later and it was bleeding more, and it looked like you might have murdered someone.
Yeah, right?
Well, that's what we were all thinking. We're like, wow, who lost that fight, right?
Had a fight at the concession stands.
Yeah, totally.
Come a long way. 6 years later, right? Wow. Goes by awfully quickly, doesn't it?
It sure does. Like, yeah.
So I guess it's fitting then. I know, Courtney, you've been interviewed and you talk about this stuff a lot, but I think this is a good question for you, given your sort of very sweet and gentle personality. But so like, what does it feel like when someone says to you, you're the top ultra runner in the world?
I don't know. I feel really lucky to be in this sport right now and to be able to be exploring these really far distances. And yeah, I don't need a label with it. I just hope to keep exploring a little bit more of what's possible to help then maybe accelerate the people behind me's path to it as well. So like the generations coming up, maybe we'll know a little more and be able to step into it a little bit easier if I can figure out some of those pieces right now.
Well, yeah, and exploring is exactly what you're doing, Courtney. And we've just come off of a presidential election too, where we're seeing the first female vice president, which is just absolutely amazing. And I think that a lot of the articles that I've been more intrigued by about you is that there's a lot of younger female runners that are creeping up in the running space, and realization that women are beating men. And not just by a little bit, by a lot. And I think that that's kind of circling in the conversations now. How do you feel about being a role model for a lot of younger female runners?
There's so many women doing so many amazing things right now in every field. So I feel it's really cool what could be possible then for the young girls right now to be coming up into more of a culture where they see that represented. And maybe if they can throw caution to the wind a little bit and not think about what they're supposed to do or where they're supposed to finish or how they're supposed to act, but really like be true to themselves and seek out what's possible.
Yeah, no, I think that's role models are changing. It's actually really fun to see. For so many years, the world we lived in wasn't fair. And I don't know if it'll ever be truly fair, but when we have people like you, it's like this joyful approach that you bring to a sport that most people would consider miserable. There's a lot of suffering, you know, Dave, you, I, we've suffered. And so it's sort of an interesting question to think about, which is how do you balance your joyful approach with the idea that you're going to go out and suffer? I mean, it hurts and it's getting through that. Is what's that juxtaposition like for you?
Yeah. I mean, for sure it's suffering. It hurts no matter what pace you're going, I think, in some of these races. So for sure it's suffering, but oftentimes I'll remind myself that I chose this suffering and how lucky that is. Like running is supposed to be fun and I'm choosing to sign up for these things where I'll suffer for multiple days. That's cool, like that I get to do that. Oftentimes they're beautiful. Oftentimes the people you're around are amazing. So it's like this whole experience really where the suffering is worth it because of all of those other pieces that you get to experience. And then I enjoy the suffering because it, like, I'm so curious about these long distances and what we can do with them, that the suffering is a crucial part of that, where If I'm not suffering, then I'm not exploring that. Like, I want to be pushing so hard that it's hurting, because that's how I can see how far we can go or how efficiently I could do it or all of those pieces. It's kind of wrapped up into a simple, but also like, I guess, a little messy package.
Well, yeah, and I'm curious, just like you, Courtney, and most others. I think that the vast majority of runners and just anybody logs into interviews like this because they want to gather a little bit of insight into what makes you tick, what makes the world's best runners, who you think about running 68 laps around Laz's backyard as being impossible, but yet 2 weeks ago you were there doing it. And we're actually probably a lot more comfortable than what you, maybe even you considered or other people considered. I mean, so do you think that your joyful approach has led to a lot of your success in the sport?
I think it's hard to pinpoint, but for sure it's got to factor in somehow. I think there's a ton of factors in it probably.
Yeah. So yeah, I think just digging just a little bit into this, well, first, one point I wanted to make, which Dave and I talk a lot about, which is that magic happens at the intersection of curiosity and courage. And so you're very curious, but you have to have the courage to be able to go there.
Cool. Is that a quote from someone?
Oh, me?
Really?
We're talking to a very smart guy, Courtney.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
I've been in studying this stuff for a long time myself. But I think that sometimes we miss one part of the other, right? And if you don't have both, then you don't get that sort of pathway through. I always think it's like that Star Wars when you zoom to the other side and when you push hard on that, which I think you seem to exemplify. Right? You do actually have a lot of courage. I don't think people talk about it a lot, but you're not afraid, right? And that's different than curiosity. Curiosity is a desire to know, but then you have to have that matched up. So that intersection, I don't know, but yeah, what do you think about that?
I think that's such a cool, I don't know, that's really cool. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. If you're just curious about it, it doesn't necessarily mean action. So the courage piece would put things into motion. And I think in general, people are setting lower expectations for themselves than they should. And maybe it's because of the curiosity or the courage piece or whichever might be a little bit less for them, but their bar is lower and then they can reach it a little bit easier. And then they feel like that was good. That was as far as I could go because that was the bar that I set. But if we all just notch up our bars a few more levels and chase something that's maybe out of reach, like that's the cool part about that backyard format is there is no finish line. So if you set a bar for yourself, you're almost like setting yourself up for failure with it. Right. You need to be like a little bit crazy where you don't set a bar at all and you just keep chasing something imaginary. Like how far can we actually go on this 4 mile loop? And I think that's pretty cool. That's a special thing to be able to do.
We had Laz on the podcast and we called him the diabolical hillbilly from Tennessee because he came up with this concept that it challenges so much of our, like almost our DNA, right? We're really good at fixed goals. Like,
yeah.
Okay, go get that 4 minute mile, go get that promotion, go do anything and we're good. But then when you make it somewhat indeterminate, then you're like, whoa, now what do I do? Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
There's no finish line. Yeah.
So like you did 68. I mean, it's hard to impossible to measure, but how much is there 100 could you do? Like, does it keep going?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to say yes. Yeah, of course. And let's see, what will it take? What kind of person or what kind of day or days or strategies can they implement so that they could be finding that out? But I think in general, in a format like that, and really in anything where you're chasing a dream that's a little bit crazy, you just have to think, yes, it's possible.
Right. Well, and Courtney, so let's give our listeners a little bit of an insight into where your head goes in between yards at Biggs. I mean, I love that, being curious, but also being very courageous. You have to step up to the line. You have to answer the bell, right? But there had to be hours where you were shaking at the knees that you didn't want to get out and do another one. Where do you find that courage to step up to the line every hour?
I tried to stay in very factual parts of my brain and not let emotions weigh into it. So there were definitely multiple hours in a row where I was struggling. It was really hot. Between every lap, I was just having people put ice on me anywhere they could because I felt like my skin could fry an egg. Like it was just emitting so much heat, you know? But it was also just like, okay, stay in the facts. Here's what you can do with this situation. And then you're getting on the line when that 1 minute whistle blows. So it was never letting any emotion or letting it snowball in your brain where you let one bad moment lead to extrapolating out to think, well, it's over. I'm having this one bad moment. There's no way I could make it 4 more hours. Or like sometimes we get ahead of ourselves instead of just staying in that moment. And if you don't have a choice, you go back to the line.
There you go, right? There's only one history and many futures. So you want to write that one the way you want to. Yeah, I think that is, well, I guess maybe we'll finish it. How did you feel at lap 67/68? How was like, oh gosh, I wish I was kept going or happy to be done or?
I was having a really fun night. So it was just Harvey and I, we had switched to the road loop. And I'd hit a really great groove with my whole night routine. Like I was running the 4 miles very robotically, hitting these marks along the route that were the same every time. And then I was getting back to camp and I was like a robot still doing this sleep, eat, drink something, back to the line routine. So it was pretty fun, actually. I remember like thinking out on one of the loops, this is kind of cool. Like I'm just like in this robot zone right now where I'm just doing this and it's like enjoyable, but also it's not like I wasn't getting in my head about anything really. Like I wasn't thinking about morning. I wasn't thinking about going over 300 miles. I was just cranking through these laps and feeling like no worse for wear every single time, which was pretty cool. So I wasn't intending or thinking we would stop anytime soon because I just wasn't like projecting into the future that far. I was really in the moment. And then at the start of lap 68, Harvey looked at me and we're friends and we had been chatting throughout and encouraging each other. And definitely we were trying to work as a team. We knew that to do something cool, we needed each other. And so encouraging each other, being each other's cheerleader out there was important for that. And we had talked about that 300 mile mark earlier in the race and like how cool that would be. And he looked at me at the start of lap 68 and he said, I'm really struggling. I don't know if I can get us to 300. And then we like fist bumped and then the whistle blew or whatever and the lap started. So Harvey, it turned out, had turned around very shortly after we had left on that loop, but I didn't know it. So it was kind of weird when it finished because it's strange. Like a lot of things when you're coming near to the conclusion of them, you know you're getting close to the end. And this is a format where you don't have any, I didn't have any notion we would be done yet. So it was like, oh, okay. That's it.
I'm done. Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had the privilege, Courtney, of interviewing Torbjörg, who will be at Biggs next year. And he ended up winning. He beat Anna in Sweden. I think it was 55 hours. Is that right, Joe?
Yeah.
And so Toby ended up saying something really interesting. And he said, all throughout the day, I wanted to win. But at the end, I didn't want to win. And he said, that was kind of the worst thing that happened, is because everybody else found their limit, but I didn't find mine that day. Does that ring true with you? Does that make sense, or would you oppose that?
I don't oppose it. I don't disagree with it. I think for me, all throughout the whole race, every single lap, and throughout all the days, for me, it was like a team sport where I wanted the people around me to stay in as long as possible, and so. As a member of the team, I needed to keep showing up to the line to just keep the momentum going. Like the group mentality of we all move as this amoeba. If one keeps going, then people just keep trickling in. So the whole thing for me was never necessarily about winning. I wanted to be there in the end. And I knew I didn't want to ruin the game where I stopped early so that someone else couldn't keep running. Right. But yeah, I guess my mindset about it was, to do something cool on this course right now, we need people. And so it was encouraging each other. It was, you know, swapping gear or stories or, you know, whatever would give a person the boost to keep coming on the next loop. And then when it got down to Harvey and I, it wasn't in my head about winning. It was like keeping myself in it so that Harvey could do his work and keep himself in it, and we could both keep on going. Because the whole format in that is about going a far distance. Like, if you want to win a race, you should sign up for, you know, a 5K or whatever, and then you're done in however many minutes. But the format of this one, I think, is less about winning and more about pushing distances, seeing what's possible, and making it special where you need at least two people to have a great day to do that.
No, I agree. And we were talking to Harvey, the week before Big's Backyard, and we were talking about that, about the team kind of aspect of this, of what Laz has created, which is really brilliant. And really, you know, the accumulated number of laps per runner. So all the runners matter. And really, it's I was telling Harvey that on the Canadian team, we had this saying, Ubuntu, and it's a saying that Nelson Mandela really used in South Africa, which means community. And there's a saying that says, I am because we are. So I need you to be great so I can be great. And you need me to be great so you can be excellent. And I found that in that format, it really wasn't, we weren't racing one another. We were racing with one another. And whoever was struggling at the back, you'd always see people kind of coming around them and supporting them and giving them encouragement. Did you notice that in America as well too?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why this format's so cool. Like, so it cool. is totally where you need each other to be your best in order for everyone else to be their best and vice versa. It's so awesome. I love it.
Oh, yeah. It's the best. Absolutely.
On these many levels. I think if we look at the history of sport or adventure, and we go farther when we're with someone, that's always that sort of saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go farther, then go with someone. And it's interesting, like even some of the greatest other distance races or events have done the best when there was that dynamic. And
yeah.
It often is that, yeah, everyone's sort of happy to be the winner, but they actually are more happy to have done it with someone than just be the flat out winner. I think it's part of what's been so hard for us during the pandemic, right? We're actually, our neuro design is to be with people. It's what actually, you know, keeps us all living well together.
Yeah.
And so this is a format that actually really encourages that.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think it's just like life in general is those memories made along the way. So always in my races, my favorite moments were ones that I got to share with people along the course or my crew or a pacer, whoever it was. But those are the ones that you take to your grave. It's not like material things or places in things. It's those shared memories, moments.
So the connection with Laz, of course, is always the question of, is there a Barclays in Courtney's future? And is that the place where dreams really do go to die?
I'm very intrigued by the Barclay, for sure. So we'll see when it can happen, and we'll see if my dreams die out there. I know I have a lot of work to do with maps.
Yes, so. And that was going to be my next question, Courtney, is how's your navigation?
Well, I'm starting pretty low at the bottom with that amount of knowledge, which means there's a lot of room to learn.
Right. And I was talking to Laz a while back, and I was talking to him about Barclay, and he said, oh, Dave, it's not that bad. He said, it's really hard to get lost on the course. And I think it was tongue in cheek completely.
Okay.
I don't know. I get lost in the parking lot to go find my vehicle. I'm terrible. So,
So I was an adventure racer for a long time, and you learn a lot of our lessons the hard way. And one was, I was running and I fell and my compass went flying somewhere. And I'm like, okay, now what do you do? Like, I didn't have a backup, right? So it was like, you know, there is those parts of this race that are very different. Like I did after 20 minutes of crawling around on my hands and knees, finally found it under some leaves. But otherwise you're sort of cooked. And same with Barclays, whether it's your backup headlamp or there's just a lot of it when you're out there in the middle of nowhere and it goes dark somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it's another one where he's making it so people can chase this thing there's like in Biggs, there's no finish line. In this, it's basically guaranteed you won't make it to the finish line. So these like lofty goals that make people level their bar up a little bit to try and chase it. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, and when you talk to him, you're like, this guy could run a company. I mean, he's He's pretty wicked smart.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I in my other sort of like phraseology, I was listening to one of your interviews about sort of this trade-off, and I like to think of always happy, never satisfied. You know, do you feel like that's a bit of your persona in terms of how you go at each of these events and your running?
Yeah. I've never heard it described that way, but I would say yes.
Well, because happiness is intrinsic, right? That's something we choose, right? Satisfied is about our performance. And so you can still be happy with yourself, but not with your performance, because some days you're right. Like I might run out of calories, or I turn my ankle, or whatever it might well be. So
yeah,
there's this gamer part of that. And it's better to be happy anyway, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think in a sport like this, there's always something you can tweak and do a little bit better. So to me, there's like no perfect race possible, because always you could have done something a little differently and had it domino effect throughout the race in a different way. And that's the fun part of it. Like I love the puzzle pieces involved in ultra running, and I love trying to figure them out myself and failing at it sometimes and getting to try again in a different way. That's definitely part of the intrigue of this sport.
Yeah. Well, so Courtney, let's talk about that. Let's talk about duration events, because it seems like, yeah, when it comes to speed and when it comes to, and I know when we say speed in 100 kilometers, it sounds ridiculous. And I know that our listeners are going to shake their heads, but of course, then you go to 100 miles. And now the 200 miles is a new 100 mile. But it seems like I just saw Transamericana on the weekend on YouTube. It was Ricky Gates' TransCon running event. Pete Kostelnik we had on, it looks like Zach Bitter and Michael Ward might be making an attempt with the TransCon. Is that something that would intrigue you?
Eventually, yeah. I think I'm like building up to it a little bit. The snowball hasn't gotten quite that big yet. Right now, I'm really intrigued by 100 mile plus, but this summer was really grabbed by the 500 mile distance. Mm-hmm. It's the distance of the Colorado Trail. I attempted it and didn't make it, but I just think that's a really fun, like mid absurd long distance. It's not the Appalachian Trail where it's so long you have to have a schedule, and it's not a 200 miler where, I mean, really you maybe could do it without sleep if everything works your way. It's like this weird in between. And so that was pretty cool to kind of play around with that. I'm not quite at TransCon, but eventually I know the snowball will get there.
It seems to with most. So yeah, no, I could see you doing it. I don't know. I had to ask. I don't know if it was going to be sooner than later, but it does sound like later.
Yeah, nothing's in the works yet, but you never know, especially like this year taught us that we can have every intention for our upcoming year and it can all be thrown out the window pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's definitely not written off, but nothing is actively being planned. You could really ask me about any race and if I was interested, and I would say yes. So
right, there we go. We now know, Dave, if we put on a race, we can invite Courtney and she'll come.
Right. It might even be like a 3,000 meter steeplechase. She sits to everything.
Yeah. Wearing a snorkel mask and juggling water balloons. Perfect.
I have a feeling Courtney's going to show up as long as it brings laughs. As long as she's giggle and laugh, she's in.
I do like the sort of that can-do creative attitude. I was, when you're doing a lot of road marathons, and this guy runs by me and he's juggling as he's running. And he ran a 3:10 marathon juggling. Like,
wow.
Like up and down hills. Like how do you...
I think a new record was just set for a person juggling. They were running on a track juggling, and they set a new record for the length of time they were able to keep the juggling That's going. Impressive. And it was hours. I think it was like 5 hours, 5.5 hours of running and juggling.
Impressive. Are you going to break that record, Courtney?
I did have a juggling set when I was a kid, so I just got to get it back out. And
so again, Courtney, you didn't say no.
I didn't say no.
No, you didn't.
No, I think that, but so this is actually, I like this question for myself. So when you have that can-do attitude, this positive, this like sort of embracing life at the deepest level, you want to stay away from people who sort of are like negative, right? And they don't have that positive energy. What do you do either about them? Do you stay away? Do you feel like that you're trying to get them excited about life, or what's your sort of approach to the others who are like, oh, you can't do that, this can't happen kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess Everyone, I think everyone's got something to offer. So it would be figuring out what that is, even if they always are naysaying, maybe they've got something else. I also think that energy and like good vibes can pass around. And so, yeah, by just being positive, maybe they can catch that a little bit and take it with them to their next thing. And maybe they'll feel a little hint of it. I don't know, though.
I don't know that I have an answer either. It's just there is something to be said for it's more fun to hang out with people who are sort of upbeat and positive. This year has been tough, right? The pandemic, I think, sort of took us for a ride. Clearly your training went pretty well because you won bigs. You had the 500 miler that had sort of an abort in the middle. How was the year for you?
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, it's awful that all of this was going on, but running, we're pretty fortunate where you don't need much to go running. So I was able to keep doing that in Colorado. We were really lucky where they left the trails all open and actually were encouraging people to get outside and move. So we were never restricted to our homes like a lot of places I know had to. So I was able to train probably more than ever and get to like having the opportunity to have a clear schedule. No travel, no races. So it was entirely just adventuring in the trails around my house, the mountains of Colorado. It was pretty cool. Like I ended up really liking it, even though it came at the cost of something not so great going on in the world.
Yeah, and that's for sure.
But it was a good reminder to like slow down and also a reminder of how, you know, great it is where we are. Like I think a lot of people were able to explore their home trails and their home neighborhoods more than ever and suddenly realized like what a playground they had there the whole time. And they had been looking plane flights away always for adventure. And here it was. I also saw a ton of families out on the trails. And so, you know, hopefully that spurs this new next generation of kids from the city who now realize like there's these amazing trails right outside Denver, Colorado that I get to play on. So that could be cool. And then there were things like the quarantine races that people were putting on. So like getting together with the quarantine backyard in March or April, early April was so fun. And there were so many clever things like that that we're coming up with to stay motivated or feel social or connected or yeah. Hopefully some of those things can just keep moving forward even when life resumes normal.
And so for anybody who didn't tune in to the Quarantine Backyard Ultra, so I was one of the race organizers with that group, and I sent Courtney an email saying, hey, you gotta come, and you did, along with Maggie and a whole bunch of other really great runners, really good people.
But well, one thanks thing for organizing, Dave.
Oh yeah, no, thanks for coming. It was super fun. We ended up having like 2,400 people.
It was huge
in one Zoom meeting. It was incredible. I can't believe it didn't blow up. It was really, really, really cool. But one thing that was really, really rad was that Courtney would come back after every hour and you would give the joke of the hour, right? So they were really bad dad jokes. I wouldn't know. They weren't bad. They were great.
They were great.
The bad ones are the best.
I love those jokes.
Oh, and they were great. And so, but I just thought that it showed the world, you know, that you'd come back from running your yard, your 4.18 miles, and you'd come back with a big smile on your face wanting to tell a great dad joke. I just thought it was exactly what we thought of who Courtney DeWald was. It was great.
Hope for humanity when we see that.
Right.
I had an audience that didn't get to not hear the jokes.
Right. Yeah.
Is it good? No, it is good. I think that what we appreciate when we find someone as special as you is this, you say something like, some people don't think running is fun at all, right? But in life, what I'd like to sort of know from you, what does loving what you do mean to you? So you love running, you love being an ultra runner. What does that mean to you?
I think exactly what it sounds like, loving all of the parts of it and yeah, getting a lot of joy out of it. A lot of like, it's hard, like you have to work for it. So it's not just like falling easily into your lap. Yeah. And there's a great community with it. So loving it is like all of the pieces of it, I think.
The journey, the effort, the infrequent rewards that we get, but it's the whole journey, right? That's, I think even if, like, imagine if you were an artist or a sculptor, I mean, how much time it might take to get to an outcome, right?
And yeah.
Probably not always easy. You know, many of what we do, I think, is trying to find sort of an understanding that how we feel along the journey is actually better than the outcomes, right? That's what's sort of fun about ultra running.
Yeah, exactly.
And it doesn't have to be fast. That's the great part about this sport, right? Which is you can go at any pace you like. It's got to get out there and do that. And I like to tell people that you don't need permission to live the life you want to live, right? You can just choose that. So you ended up, I don't think you planned on being an ultra runner, right? When you started off?
No, I didn't know that would be possible.
It wasn't even really a thing, was it?
Like, no. Yeah. Yeah, no, for me, it was just a cool challenge to just keep trying these different distances and trying to level up to the next distance and see if I could survive that one. It was like a game of survival.
Which is a good, that's like a game of life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one thing that I see, Courtney, is that like the world's best runners are also what I've noticed is the world's best people. They're really incredible people in the ultra running community. And there's giants amongst the giants. And I think that you're the giant amongst the giants. You're incredible at what you do. You really, really, really are. But you're also probably one of the most humble, kind, giving, generous people that are out there. And so I think that in life, we learn a lot and we take that into our running. But I think at a time in 2020, when we have a global pandemic, when we have COVID, we're learning to live life in this COVID-type world. I think the rest of the world is looking upon ultra runners and trying to ask, how do they adapt hour by hour, day after day of running his backyard and the Moab 240 and all your other races that you've become successful at? And you've become incredible at coping and taking what you've learned from life and putting that into racing. What are you now taking into life that you've learned from racing back into life at a time of COVID? How are you adapting day to day with our new worldly realities?
Yeah, I think it's staying in the moment, kind of like during an ultra when it gets really hard, sometimes you have to break it down into really small chunks in order to convince yourself that you can do that. So whether it's the next aid station 20 miles away or it's the next tree 20 meters away, whatever's digestible in that moment. And so I think that's super applicable to this COVID wave that, you know, goes and comes back and, you know, rules change and our knowledge of it changes. And so staying in the moment and then just being okay with whatever you can digest right then. Like, is it just till lunchtime that I can picture being like able to get to? Then just do that and do it as best you can. And at lunchtime you reassess. Or, you know, is it the whole week that you can picture? I don't have kids. It's just been my husband and I during this pandemic. So I can't imagine all the layers added in with kids doing school from home and people still working from home and all of the layers that is. But I think in general, just breaking it down into that digestible piece can work no matter who you are.
Yeah. So building on that, a little bit of advice maybe to people listening about, so it's easy to see what the physical training plans look like. Go run a mile today, 10 miles, 15, whatever. Do you have any advice on the mental training that one should do that gets you ready for an ultra or for a big backyard? Is there anything you do specifically or could tell people what they could do?
So I don't follow a training plan for my physical workouts. And I also don't have any specific plan for my mental training. I always hope to use races for sure to accumulate the biggest mental lessons and the biggest mental endurance gains that I can. But day to day, for sure, there's some in there. Like, I think one easy thing to do is to just like always go out and do something. So not letting yourself fall onto excuses of weather or your favorite TV show just came on or you just don't feel like it or you didn't sleep great last night. Like, there's so many reasons to not do things. But if your mindset can just switch where it's like, this is what I get to do right now, so I'm going to do it, that I think can be really helpful in the long run of gaining some mental strength where you just don't look for excuses always. Like, if you're not in that habit, then it becomes easier to not do it.
Yeah, I agree. And what's sort of interesting about that is when you don't make an excuse in life, then you won't make the excuse in the race because we know we're going to run into this. It's not the exact same thing, but it is the same feeling and the mental anguish that goes alongside with that. Where, I, of course, the micro goals, which you talked about, are really good. And we always are told, don't make a decision when you're in a bad state, right? Move out of that bad state before you would ever make a decision. Like, don't, if you feel crummy, we always tell ourselves, well, we're going to feel good again soon. So why don't I wait till then to decide if I should keep going rather than right now? So yeah, I think it's a interesting sport, you know, having gone through, you know, just running, triathlon, all those things. I found the ultra community to be the most friendly and supportive as well, which is something that's hard to find. And I think you even commented on a race where you fell and someone came back and helped pick you up, right? And that's emblematic of what we would like to see more in life. And so it's a practice. It's almost a simulator for us the other way. Go do the races to simulate sort of what you're going to encounter in life, and you might end up with a little bit easier pathway.
Yeah. The community totally hooked me in, and how friendly it was from the get-go. That person who ran back after I face planted in a mud puddle to pull me back on my feet. That was in my very first 50-mile race, which was my second ultra ever. And so right away I learned how cool this sport is and that this is how we do it in this sport. You're never in such a rush that you can't help someone near you. And same in that same race, I mean, it was horrendous weather, sleeting, windy, like awful. And if you asked anyone if it sounded fun to be doing that, the answer would be no. Like, of course that doesn't sound fun. But the person I was running near in this awful weather had put on a trash bag because they didn't have a raincoat, and they were just hooping and hollering, squealing with delight down this trail. And it was infectious. It was like, oh, we don't have to hate life right now because we've got these things that are supposedly awful. We could make the best of this situation. And I think ultra running does that too, where you make the best of it and you help each other along the way as you're all doing that.
Yeah, I know, I agree. I think that on paper, if you paid attention to social media and what other people think is being hard and painful and difficult, yeah, we're not supposed to be having fun out there. But yet we end up seeing people like Courtney and other people at the front of the race is having a lot of fun and kind of going, meh, it is what it is. And let's just go out and keep having these meaningful experiences. So Courtney, like, you strike me as you're very humble. You'd be like a small town girl, right? Where you're very personable. It seems like anybody can come up to you and chat, and you just have time for everyone. How are you handling a lot of the publicity that you're getting now? New York Times, the Joe Rogan, I believe, was downloaded over 2 million times or something rather. How are you dealing with publicity?
Did you know you have a Wikipedia page, by the way? That's an accomplishment. They only put
Oh, jeez. I never in my wildest dreams would have predicted that this is what I would be doing right now, but I'm thankful for it every single day and trying to enjoy it as much as possible every single day. Enjoy the ride while it's here. And if those different publications or podcasts or interactions with people can help them try something that's a little bit hard or that seems a little bit crazy, then that's great. Because I think it would be a really cool world if everyone was reaching for the thing that's just right out of reach, like pushing themselves a little bit harder.
Yeah, it's what makes us special. Just to comment back on the community, we have lots of cultures, whatever, there's maybe, I don't know, 189 countries around the world. But if you go run an ultra race anywhere, we have the same community feel. It's like there's something that you just sort of, either a type of person or the way we do it, really, you could run, you know, in Australia, New Zealand, go to China, go to Europe, wherever. It's pretty special in that way. And as seen by this global backyard, right? I mean, imagine how hard that would be to get that many countries cooperating to do this kind of race. I mean, like, it's almost incomprehensible. It's amazing.
Yeah, I agree. It is this same feeling no matter where you are. You show up to a trail running group in a different country where you've never been, and it feels like a group of friends that you just haven't seen in a while, or, you know, a family reunion of sorts. It's pretty wild how welcoming it feels always in my experiences.
Yeah. So let's talk Mont Blanc just for a couple minutes. Cause right, that's like we say Western States is the big race in the US, but Mont Blanc is, well, the races alone, I think, are 2000 plus or something like that. Plus the people out on the course. I mean, it's like,
it's a lot.
How did that one feel? Different, you know, hard race, of course, cause of the mountains, but the atmosphere.
Oh, it was electric. It was pretty exciting through all the little towns. But then you would get back to the simple trail running feel when you were out on the trails in the mountains. So you remembered how special the trail running community was, and I would get to share miles with people who maybe we spoke the same language or not, but it was just us out on this trail in the middle of nowhere, beautiful stars or sunrises or whatever. But then you'd come rolling through a town and it would just be like mayhem of people cheering and yeah, the whole town showing up to help these runners keep pushing through. So it was a cool combination of both, like, you know, the exciting crowds, but also the simple, like, just your feet and this trail and this mountain.
Yeah, that was a good win. Congrats.
Well, thank you.
Was it hard? Do you feel like that was a hard day? I mean, of course hard, but like for Courtney.
It was a really hard day. Yeah, about 70 miles, I was smoked. I was throwing up, my legs were trashed, I was overheated. And yeah, there was still 30 miles and three huge climbs to go to get to the finish line. So then it was just one step in front of the other, basically. That was as far ahead as I could think.
I saw some of that video, I could see. But, you know, had a good outcome, right? So make me think of, I did the rim to rim to rim on July 4th weekend one year. It was 120 degrees and I felt like my head was going to burn open. But you keep talking about the heat. Are you an FKT seeker at all?
I didn't latch onto it this year with no racing. I tried the one FKT of the Colorado Trail, but I didn't go after a ton like on my local trails or anything. I think it's a really cool challenge and it's fun that there's these routes out there that anyone can try at any time and see where they can land. So I think it's awesome that this website has been developed for it. It's like fastestknowntime.com. If you've never seen it, it has the whole world. And then you can zero in on where you are and figure out what established FKT routes there are, what times have been done, read people's reports on it. So I think it's just another way where running is cool. You don't need a referee or a stadium or anything special. It could just be your shoes and this route that you want to just keep figuring out better. That's pretty fun.
Yeah. So, big challenge, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And so what about the Colorado Trail after not succeeding on the FKT this year? Are you going to go back next year and do it or the year after?
Oh, I hope so. I loved it so much. It was really cool. I made it to 309 miles out of 400 and or whatever it is. And that was, I had hoped to make it to Denver, but I think it just lit the fire for me a little more of that is so cool that I got to basically... I got to experience the first 300 miles of it, and now I get to go try it again, try to do it better, and try to make it the whole way to Denver. So, yeah, I hope to try again for sure.
Yeah, there's no shortage of good challenges, right? That's the good part of what we have going on. Colorado, you got 14ers to do. I love and in different geographies, like in the UK, the Bob Graham Round and other of these great just... difficult, hard challenges that people have been doing them for a long time and in sort of somewhat of obscurity. And you have like Killian who's bringing some attention to it, but almost always done with this sort of quiet, sort of humble approach to some of these amazing challenges. So yeah, you could be anywhere and have that opportunity.
Yeah. Have you guys tried FKTs? You did, Dave.
Yeah, with the Trans-Canadian speed record. Yeah. And so I'll be going back again this year, 2021. Okay. We'll see where COVID numbers are at and government regulation. Right now in the Maritimes, in Eastern Canada, I don't think you can get in unless you're an Eastern resident.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I'll be hopefully making an attempt this next summer. It's a big one. It's 7,200 kilometers. So yeah, it'll take up the whole summer.
You're still intrigued by it though.
Oh, once you try it, I end up having an injury about halfway into the country. And once you try it, you got to go back. And what a way of seeing your country.
Yes, I 100% agree. Did the same thing with Colorado. It was like places you would never visit otherwise. And here you are with your feet just moving through it.
It almost makes you wonder why we didn't do it before. I mean, these to go and take one step across an area of land that you want to go and explore. I talked to Pete about his Key to Key run and just the people he met, the foods he ate, the weather, it was all meaningful experiences. Every day he had a meaningful experience. Isn't that cool?
That's so cool. It's the same as Ricky Gates' Every Single Street challenge that he started with San Francisco, where he ran every single street in the city. And that sort of took off where people all over the world then were like, oh, I want to explore my town that way. And people were learning all sorts of things about this place they had lived their whole life. It's so cool. Running That's is so amazing. Cool.
It just yeah. is. And what's even better is the community of runners that we all get to share this with.
Yeah.
Having these goals and wanting to all have really great experiences all together. I think it's so rad.
Yeah. I think the other thing it shows is that this, I go back to the concept of you don't need permission to go do something in life. And often too many people are waiting for something before they go do it. And this community, this is not a community of people who are making millions of dollars, who are doing this with big sponsorships. This is a community of just amazing people who are taking the resources that are available and leveraging them for this amazing journey. And so this sort of like, well, I would if I, these conditional kinds of ways of thinking are not necessary. I mean, Ricky Gates, this is one of 100, I mean, Dean Karnazes years ago, right? 50 marathons, 50 states.
Yeah.
And so I think that we should dream up whatever we want to dream up and then go after it. And it doesn't matter, like there is no failure in partial accomplishment because it's a full accomplishment, whatever you did, right?
Yeah.
309 miles is amazing. Doesn't it matter there were more miles to go? Doesn't matter Dave went halfway across Canada. That's amazing. So we don't have to define it the same way as some mythical thing of like winning the Super Bowl. By the way, the day after you win, it's sort of over anyway, because the next team is like, so this I think is much more sustaining. I think if we can get more enthusiasm around the sport because of its freedom and its dynamic sort of in nature, we will all of us benefit from that, right?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. And that it's one where you can create goals that fit with where you're at then. Right. So like, what's the thing that inspires you and gets you moving? That should be your thing then.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what's so cool, Courtney, too, is about the backyard experience and the backyard race. Yeah, I've talked to Laz in length about this and about how it's just about showing up and not quitting. You know, mm-hmm. the vast majority of people that do backyard races, once they look at the person next to them and go, oh my goodness, I'm not going to beat Courtney. I might as well drop out now. They quit. And some people say, oh, I never quit. Well, that's not true. We all quit. Just quit a little bit later than what you would normally quit, right? Or be the last person standing like Courtney DeWalter, but there aren't a lot of Courtneys out there. And so, yeah, so what's neat about these events is, yeah, they're tailored to wherever you're at in your life. You meet in the middle.
Yeah, exactly.
So Courtney, Chasing Tomorrow is the name of our podcast. I think it fits you quite well. It's like, that's what Dave and I are all about. It's like, tomorrow will be better than today. We know that for sure, because we're going to make it so. So for you, what's sort of, I know you've talked a lot about his openness to, but what's your feeling about your Chasing Tomorrow?
I mean, I like that name and I like that philosophy for sure of we get to carve this path through this one life we get, however we choose. And so to make the most of that every day. And then when we wake up the next day to make the most of that. So for sure, chasing tomorrow, but also doing what I can today to make it great.
Well, you're doing a fabulous job for the world, for the ultra running community. If we had a million more Courtney DeWalters, we'd all be doing much better on the planet.
And there'd be so many bad jokes.
All right. So you have to end with at least a joke for us then, Courtney. Can you give us a...
Putting her on the spot. I like it.
No, right on the spot.
Putting me on the spot for sure. Oh man. What do you call... Nope. I don't remember it. This is my problem, you guys. That's why I have to have a joke book, because I can remember pieces of jokes, but then always pair them with the wrong punchline.
I know. Then it sounds terrible, right? I do the very same thing.
Yeah. Or you have to backpedal, redo it. Everyone's falling asleep.
Jokes are always good too. You know, we're not jokes. Well, anyway, Courtney, we do appreciate it. And we'll look forward to seeing you out on the trail and doing more incredible things and serving as a role model for all of us. Thanks very much.
Well, likewise, you guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Courtney.
All right. Let me see if I can get this thing started.
Courtney, that was excellent. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.